Welcome back to another episode of Uncle Takes. We're your hosts, Monica and Tank. And today we're doing Dune Part 2, which came out in 2024. If you haven't already listened, go take a listen to Dune Part 1. We talk about a lot of stuff in that. And you should probably listen to that one before you listen to this one. Anyway, Dune Part 2 stars principally the same people, I think. There were a couple people that died in Part 1 that don't show up in this one. And then we get introduced to some new characters as well.
There's actually some people who I thought died in Part 1 that do show up in this.
Yeah, right. So there's that. Spoiler alert. but, yeah, so Timothée Chalamet is still the main guy. Rebecca Ferguson playing his mother. But this time we actually get to see Zendaya, who plays Chani. So a quick summary of this movie is that as two of the few survivors of their home planet Atreides, Paul Atreides and his mother Lady Jessica are still being hunted by the Harkonnens on planet Arrakis. As a reminder, the Harkonnens had a war in Part 1. They killed nearly all of the Atreides in order to take back Arrakis to maintain control of the spice production. So now Paul and Lady Jessica, throughout this movie, hang with the Fremen and assimilate into their culture, while Paul continues to deny that he is, in fact, the One. The One goes by many names. Sometimes it's Makti, sometimes it's Lisan El Gaib, Kwisatz Haderach, the Messiah. He goes by many names. As they learn the Fremen ways and continue to battle the Harkonnens, eventually they plot an attack to overthrow the Emperor, take back Arrakis, and put an end to the spice production on Arrakis, which will restore it to its original beauty. And that's their long plan, you know, help the Fremen win. So, with that, where do you want to start?
I mean, I think we can start pretty close to the beginning. Because, you know, why not? This one, it's mainly, what's the kid's? Paul and, her name's not Rebecca in the movie, right? Jessica. Paul and
Jessica. Lady Jessica.
Are doing a little sort of Dances with Wolves thing for most of the movie. They're basically, I don't know, learning to live in the desert for some reason. It doesn't seem like... I don't know how long this movie takes place over. Do you have any sense of that?
It felt like less than a year, right? Because she was pregnant in the beginning and pregnant at the end.
Right. I guess that makes sense. Although, I mean, maybe, right? Because it's all sort of a... The pregnancy seems rather magical, so it's sort of tough. There's a lot of, they mostly, so this, when I saw this movie, saw it in IMAX, it's a long movie, I think it's 6 hours long, and it's like one of those things where I kept waiting for them to leave the desert so the movie could start, and they just never do. This is an entirely desert movie. I think they leave the desert in the last 20 minutes, which it turns out is the worst part of the movie. But this is all just dicking around in the desert. Like, nothing happens. They're just hanging out in the desert. It's a hangout movie. It's like a vibes movie in the desert.
they're hanging out. They're participating in guerrilla warfare.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know why, really. I guess they don't want the spice to be harvested. I never really got what they wanted. I didn't realize there was a giant civilization south of, like, what, like, it looks like a windstorm, maybe, right? There's some kind of barrier, it seemed like.
Yeah, some dust cloud.
Dust clouds, yeah.
It's enough of a deterrent that the Harkonnens think the southern hemisphere of the planet is entirely uninhabitable.
Yeah, I don't know. Why don't all the Fremen live there?
In the south?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Why do they, like, dick around in these, like, caves instead of just, like, living peacefully in the south?
I don't know. You know, if you're a spaceship flying in, how do you have to perceive a sandstorm differently, you know, if you're a couple miles away from the planet as you would if you're on the planet. So how can you not see that it's like a ring dust storm? And once you get through that, the South isn't uninhabited.
Yeah, is it like a full over the top, like atmospheric dust storm?
Yeah, I don't. And there's just a bubble non-dust storm underneath. But no, that's not true, because it's sort of
like
a paradise on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed more chill. I was so confused when they went to the that side. I mean, so anyways, the plot of the movie, like you said, they screw around in the desert. The Emperor is hanging out, Christopher Walken. And he is just hanging. He has a daughter who is Florence Pugh, who is, like, writing journals, I think, is, like, part of the framing device.
Yeah.
And is she a Bene Gesserit?
Yes, she is.
Yeah. And so that, she's part of that whole plan, it seems like. It's not like the Emperor, I guess, wanted to take down the Atreides because they were too powerful. That's sort of the whole plot of the first movie, right?
Yes.
I think we
learned that's why he did it this movie.
Yeah, but I thought that was the only, I don't know, I guess it wasn't, it's not clear why anybody does anything. And yeah, so like overall, they hang out in the desert for way too long. Josh Brolin's guy comes back. They find some hidden nukes. I guess every family in this universe has nukes. Like you'd have like China that you pass down throughout your family. But they just have, like, a nuclear arsenal. Here's the thing. Here's my question about nukes.
Is that what it was? They hid nukes on planet Arrakis? Those were Atreides nukes?
Yeah, that was the family nukes.
Why would they hide them on Arrakis? I missed that.
Yeah, I don't know either. Because this, like, they were only here for, like, a week, right?
Yeah, it felt like the second night they got taken over.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, pretty quick that they got overrun by,
It's like day one, land, check out the spice fields,
yeah.
And then day two, hide your nukes.
Yeah, and like, here's the thing. If I were to go, like, if I had nuke, like, if I had, like, you always see this in, like, shows when, like, the terrorists are trying to buy a nuke. But if I had a nuke, like, what would I do with it? Like, how do I nuke something? You know?
You drop Fat Boy on it, right? Just get up in a plane and...
I know this might sound stupid. Can you just drop a nuke on things? Like, literally just... Do you have to, like... Are there buttons on the nuke? That, like... Is there no, like, sort of a support system for nukes? Or, like, if you just find a bunch of nukes, can you just nuke shit?
Ooh, you know, I doubt they're pressure nukes. But are we allowed to know that information? To know inner operations of how a nuclear bomb would work?
I don't know. It's just like if you have a bunch of nukes and you're hidden in, like, sort of like a. Have you ever seen, like, Richie Rich, I think it is, when they have, like, the. I think it's a safe in maybe Mount Rushmore, where they have, like, all the family stuff. It's sort of like that type of thing, where it's on, like, the side of a cliff, and he's like, oh, yeah, the nukes are in the cave. And then they have to, I think, unlock it maybe with I think he unlocks it with one of his. Like, some kind of biometric thing.
Yeah.
But like, even if you get a nuke, like, they're living with sand people. They don't have, like, a plane. Like, do you just walk it at people? Do you, like, trebuchet a nuke into some? Like, what the fuck is a nuke gonna do? Unless it's just, like, were they set up to just be able to nuke things? It said they use them. They use them at the end, I think. So I guess maybe they just had, like, surface-mounted, like, guns that they could shoot the nukes from?
Yeah, on wheels that they could get out of that mountain? I don't know.
Maybe it was, like, a nuclear silo where it can shoot right out of the thing. Anyways, I don't know why the fuck... It's also weird that, like, what does this take place, 10,000 years in the future?
Yeah.
That we're still doing, like, nukes are still, like, the weapon of... Not that, like, I don't know. I don't know a ton of science, I'm not gonna pretend. But, like... That's still, like, the biggest weapon, or, like, the most important thing, is we're still nuking stuff. You know, there's been no, like, there's not just, like, a, I don't know, sometimes you have, like, the graviton button, you know, I don't know. You'd figure, like, there'd be some kind of space weapon, you know? It'd be weird if, like, in Star Wars, the Death Star just, like, nukes stuff, you know? I know that happened, you know, a long, long time ago, but, like, for a space weapon, it's, like, maybe do something else than just, like, oh, they got a nuke, you know? I don't know. I thought that was... Huh. Anyways. At the same time, all this nothing is happening. It's sort of like the push and pull of this movie, right? Is Javier Bardem is constantly convinced that Paul is the Messiah.
Yeah, Javier Bardem really leans into the Morpheus role.
Yeah. So the thing is, he does have magical powers.
Yes,
Paul. Which is just a thing that some people have, because the Bene Gesserits do. His role as a messiah is just something that Bene Gesserit has made up.
Yes.
I don't know why. It seems like to fuck with the Fremen, I guess. But also the Fremen don't seem that important until all of a sudden they are, I guess. Maybe, I guess they know that. I don't know why you want to, like, unite the Fremen. Because they just don't seem that useful most of the time. I guess until the end. I guess maybe I'm underrating the Fremen. And then, so... but, like, he's not the Messiah. I don't know what they think the Messiah is, I guess.
You don't know what the Fremen think the Messiah is.
Yeah.
Yeah, other than a story that the Bene Gesserits told... over the course of, you know, a few hundred years.
Yeah, but like, so it's like, what does the Messiah do?
I think the Messiah is supposed to restore Arrakis to non-desert status.
Oh.
But I don't know why the Bene Gesserits wouldn't just, you know, do it. Maybe it's not the right time for the Kwisatz Haderach, or maybe they want more money or more spice. Maybe the Bene Gesserits think... Because the Bene Gesserits are vying for power as well, right? That's...
Well, yeah, what do they want? Do they want to, like, be the emperor? So that's why they are setting up... They sort of have his daughter already. So, like, why do the Bene Gesserits need to do anything? Like, what is their goal? Do we know that?
No, I don't think we do. Because they seem to have... no problem getting right close to the leader of every planet, right?
Yeah.
Lady Jessica, mistress with leader Atreides. Harkonnens, Lady Margot, right up to him. Emperor's daughter, Bene Gesserit. Like, there's a Bene Gesserit at the right hand of every planet's leader, so I'm not sure what more they want.
Yeah, it seems like they can just marry every major leader.
That's because they have the controlling voice, right?
I mean, I think it's mostly because they just employ, like, hot women.
Huh?
That appears to be, like, most of their strategy.
Pretty good strategy.
Right? Like, it's just, like, send Rebecca Ferguson or Florence Pugh or... Is it Leah Seydoux? Seydoux?
I don't know how to pronounce her name.
Something French, I think. And they just sort of, like, seduce various men, and it works. And then they become famous.
Yeah, I mean, they have power. So it begs the question, I don't know why they would spin the story of the Messiah for the Kwisatz Haderach to the Fremen people. But what are the Fremen holding out for? Is it a way to subjugate them to, like, maintain spice production until... the Bene Gesserit can get somebody who can unite the Fremen and take full control? Is that what the Bene Gesserit want?
Yeah, they're supposed to unite the Fremen. I understand they want to unite the Fremen. To follow them. And the idea is that... yeah, there's got to be water on Arrakis. But, like, I don't know why they need to unite the Fremen.
There's two camps of the Fremen. There's the fundamentalists, who presumably have really just leaned into the story. And then there's the, I don't know, outcasts of the North. There aren't too many Fremen in the North, right?
Wait, but the leader of the outcasts is also a fundamentalist?
Yeah.
So, like, it seems like they're all fundamentalists? Yeah, and, like, how many live in the North? Because I think Duncan Idaho in the first one says there's, like, they thought there were, like, 50,000 Fremen, but there's actually a million of them. And it seemed like he was just talking about the ones in the North. But we only see, like, a group of, like, a couple hundred.
Oh, I guess they get to that temple, and there might be a few thousand in there.
You think so? Like, when they get, when they screw around in the temple for a while?
Yeah, at the moment, Paul convinces the round table, or the leaders, that he is the one.
Are you talking about in the south, or in the...
In the south.
I'm talking about just in the north, though.
Oh, just the north. Yeah, we might only see a hundred of them, a couple hundred of them.
Yeah, like, we don't see a lot. They're like a little guerrilla fighting force, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I just, like, don't know what the point of any of the plans are. You know, it's like, at some point, they just, like, they're like, oh, this is all part of our plan. I'm just like, but to do what, though? And, like why is this the... Is this the easiest way to do whatever you're trying to do? Because, like, I don't get it. And then, like, yeah, there's a bunch of other characters that are still in this movie. So, but, like, at the end of the first one, you see the shot of, like, the guy riding the sandworm. And they're like, okay, so, like, the Fremen have this thing where they can ride the sandworms. They have desert power, which is different than air power or whatever, because they can ride the sandworms. It seemed like the sandworms, I mean, eat them, which is why they need to do sand dancing, which is
a
thing.
Yeah, they're both a garbage disposal for undesired human bodies, as well as a means of transportation.
Yeah. And I feel like this is one of the things that gets, like, super ridiculous, because you see Paul, like, as, like, you know, sort of with the, it's sort of like in that Avatar, when the guy, you know, links up with the flying, you know, pterodactyl-looking thing.
Yeah.
In this, he has to mount the sandworm and ride it, and it's like, you know, it's like a test.
Sure.
But then later, when they go south, it turns out the sandworms are, like, a trolley car, because you can just fit your entire civilization on the back, including the pregnant lady and her little palanquin, and we don't see them all get on, because Paul has to, like, stand in the desert and clip onto them, and I can't imagine all 60 of them were doing that, but what are they just, like, did it pull up to, like, a dune and just, they just jumped on top of it? Like, how did this work? Like,
I'm not sure, because, you know, Lady Jessica is in a little carrier on the back of the sandworm. And that's putting a lot of faith in a fucking worm that travels underground a whole hell of a lot. You're just, like, not worried at all. Like, if that little claw that they're using to control it, kind of like the reins on a horse if you're riding it, if that comes off, does that mean the sandworm will immediately dig? How does the sandworm know that you want it to go forward if all you can kind of do is pull on its flaps, you know?
Yeah, and why does the sandworm listen?
I don't know.
Why does it listen to you, but it's also willing to eat you at a moment's notice if you're in the sand? You know, it's not like they don't have to worry about the sandworms. It's like the sandworms will definitely eat them, and
that's
they can
why they
mount
do this
them.
Sandwalking, yeah.
And even when they mount them, it still seems like they're, like, they're not, like, tamed. They're still, like, a wild animal that does sort of go, not underground, but it sort of, like, goes through sand dunes. You know, it's not, like, cruising above land the whole time. But yeah, once they get the whole goddamn village on top of the thing, it's just like, okay, this is the shock jumping for me, where they can all just, I don't know, ride them.
Because they never showed you, because Gurney, Josh Brolin's character, was riding a sandworm at one point. So, like, were we to assume that he also ran from the top of a dune and jumped on the sandworm? No, I think I think we should reasonably believe that they can park the sandworm, be like, hey, buddy, hold on real quick. We need to pick up 60 of my friends to ride your back.
Yeah, it seems like that happens. And for whatever reason, that was the one thing this movie thought was too stupid to show. Which, in fairness, that would be really dumb. but, like, they also implied that that happened. So, yeah, they're dicking around. Like, the stuff they do in the desert is just, like, so tedious that, like, I can't understand how this was the movie. Like, they attack some Hakkanen people, I guess, when they're trying to do spice, and it's just like Paul becoming more of, you know, a leader and sort of accidentally becoming more messiah-like as he, like, tries to avoid it. But then he keeps, like, doing the stuff that he knows is gonna lead to this messiah thing. Like, he's really not supposed to go south, I think, from his visions, and then he just does, instead of just not doing that. Like, he keeps getting baited into doing the things he knows he's not supposed to do.
Yeah, but I think his hand was forced there, because I think Siege Tabra is in the north.
But, like, he knows it's going to cause, like, you know, a whole jihad if he goes south, right?
Yeah. Is that before or after he drinks the Kool-Aid and starts being able to, like, see the future very clearly?
I thought he didn't drink it until he got to the south, because that's where the worm was, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. So, yeah, he went against his better judgment, against his spice visions, and went to the south, even though everything in his body was telling him not to.
Yeah, after he drinks it in the south, the water of life, which is sandworm venom. I sort of like the idea that these things are venomous, even though they're, like, as big as a Boeing. It's like, what are they, like, what's the goal of that? To what do they need to envenom?
I don't know.
Like, each other?
I don't think they eat each other.
What do they eat?
Hopefully spice.
What
they
could
eat,
be big enough?
Spice harvesters?
Are they like krill, like baleen whales? Is this ever explained? Like, what are they? Why are they so large?
I don't know.
Is there like a ton of life in the desert? We don't see a ton.
Yeah, no. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, so who knows? Yeah, so Paul, like, goes, gets his nukes, goes and gets his whole jihad army. I, like, find Timothy Chalamet completely unconvincing as this character. I know a lot of people thought that going in and then somehow got turned around and decided that he was actually good at this. But I think, no, the initial instincts were right. This kid does not seem like any kind of, inspiring leader in any sort of context, and I just don't think he is well cast as this role.
You'd still prefer a traditional action hero.
I mean, there's not very much action in this movie. But, like, any scene that I'm meant to take him seriously when he's raising his voice, I just can't do it. And I don't know. I'm just not on board. I haven't seen him in anything else still. So, I don't know, but I just didn't see it. Everyone seems so small. You know, he's so, like, slight. That it just, he just looks ridiculous. Like, he's wearing his, like, garb, and he's just, like, lost in it. Like, I don't know. It just, like, he's swimming in his, like, weird, you know, desert people garb. And I just never know what, like, it's just so unserious. It's just, like, be serious for a second, dude. So yeah, I don't know. I don't like him in this in general. But while this is all happening, there's sort of like the side character, right? Of
Fade Rotha?
Yeah. And this is all the Hakkanen shit, right?
Yeah. So we see the Hakkanen home planet, which I don't know if the whole planet is in grayscale.
I was gonna say it's all in like not even, it's just like in like high contrast black and white too.
Yeah.
And they think this looks really good. Like they, I'm sure they were really proud of this when they made this, but this looks so the Bene Gesserit like, oh, we have a backup plan in case this doesn't work out in sort of a Game of Thrones type thing, honestly. And they, so he like gets seduced by one of the Bene Gesserits at some point, but he's introduced. Okay. So let's start with the Harkonnens. We have Batista, who was sort of in the first movie, but like sort of very, very like, sparsely used in the first movie. And he is, I think, Faye Rocca's older brother, maybe. Is that right?
They're both nephews of the Baron, but I don't think
he,
they're
he
brothers.
He is the older brother of Faye Rocca.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm looking at this. His name apparently is Beast. Did not know that. That's ridiculous. So in this movie, his only thing is like getting constantly clowned on. Like, he just gets embarrassed constantly. Anytime he's like fighting... or when he talks to Austin. So Faye Rotha is Austin Butler, who was Elvis, I think.
Okay.
And he's just like a tiny little guy, right?
Yeah.
So he's sort of like a small guy. Batista's like giant. But Faye Rocca just like slams him as soon as they meet each other for some reason. Just doubly embarrasses him. And so, like, and then I think Batista just gets killed, right, by Gurney.
Yeah, Gurney gets revenge.
When they have, like, a rematch. As he's running. Like, he's just, like, a huge chump in this movie, right? That's his character.
Yeah.
Fine. That's fine, I guess. But, like, so Faye Rocca. Is that his name? What is it? Rotha?
Faye Rotha.
Faye Rotha. Okay. It's just hard to tell because it's spelled really stupidly. Faye Rotha is set up coming out to do a gladiator match, right?
Yes, and this is his birthday present.
Yes. And I think he expects the people to be, like, inhibited in some way, right?
Yeah, drugged up and, I don't know, stumbling, clumsy,
and
not
then...
serious.
And then he sees that they're not.
One of the three is not.
Yeah, and he, like, looks at Baron, and he's like, ah, like, you know, you did this, and the guy's like, oh, I'm testing you, or whatever. Okay, right?
Yeah.
The guys he is fighting are just, like, even undrugged, are the most unthreatening people I've ever seen. Right? Like, the guy he, like, battles at the end, who he's having, like, a tough time with, is just, like, a tiny dude. Like, so, like, the setup to this character, I thought was, like, meant to be, like, a joke. Like, he was, like, he could only fight when it was set up. And he barely beats up this, like, middle-aged guy. Who, you know, is just a prisoner of war type of thing.
Yeah.
It's the type of thing where, like, in Gladiator, when he comes out and fights, like, the random, you know, prisoners, he just kills them immediately. And then, you know, the guy's like, you gotta, you know, put on more of a show. It's like that style of guys, where it's just like, you know, guys, you know, who are just picking up a weapon for the first time. Because they're not, like, fighters. So, like, my... thought in this character was that he was like a complete fraud, but that seems to be what Batista's character is supposed to be. This guy's supposed to be like a real villain, right? Or was I right the first time? Like, what was your interpretation of this character?
He might be the chosen one, and the Baron's trying to just play him up. I think he's supposed to be a skilled fighter, but it could very well be that it's entirely fraudulent. It's just a way. He has no actual skill. And it's all just a sham.
Right, but are we supposed to think that throughout the whole movie? To be clear, I'm only asking this because the end of the movie is him and Paul doing single combat.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if this guy is a clown, then Paul doing single combat that he almost loses
isn't impressive. It's embarrassing.
Is like stupid.
Yeah.
And is like a weird climax for your movie. But if there's no way for me to watch this movie and find this guy threatening, he's weird looking. He's bald. He like does a lot of tongue stuff. You know, he's sort of a little creepy, I guess, but he's not like threatening. Like, I wouldn't want to like be in an alley with him. But like, if I had to be in single combat with somebody, I'd like it. I think he's not bad. Like, I can probably take him. I'd rather fight him than Batista, even though he like choke slams Batista at some point. And Batista just Batista dies like a huge bitch, and like, that's the character that this guy seems to be. But I don't think both of them are supposed to be huge clowns. I think this guy is supposed to be like the like proud warrior weirdo. And it's just like, yeah, and he's the other perspective chosen one. And like the fact that he's just like sucks. And like the movie seemed like this is one of those movies where I think I'm just missing. Like, I think someone's just going to emerge and tell me that, like, I missed the whole fucking point of it. Because, like, this guy's supposed to suck, right? But then, like, why is that the climax? Like, you can have, like, a subversive climax, I guess. But it's not, like, played like that, really. It's, like, you know, it's sort of like one of those scenes you see when, like, two guys are gearing up to fight. But, like, then you realize that, like, you know, a real life, it's trying to do the thing where, like, real life fights aren't like movies, and most of, like, if two guys square up to fight, they just end up sort of hugging each other and rolling around on the ground. And that's sort of, like, what Paul and him see, like, that seems like the setup to this, is like, oh, these guys are two, like, complete frauds. But I don't think that's what it is, right? I think this is, like, these are the two potential chosen ones, and they both just, like, can't sell it.
Yeah. On the Fade Rotha thing, you might be reading into how fraudulent the initial setup was, right? So they're building him up to be the leader, right? The next Baron.
Okay.
You know, of their, and just because it's like rigged, doesn't mean that he doesn't have any skills in fighting. So I think he's supposed to be a skilled fighter. Like, yes, it wasn't easy for him, but it's not like. I don't know. The Atreides army, isn't that one of the best armies? Didn't we conclude that last time? They're better than the Sardaukar. They're better than the Harkonnen. So, like, Atreides fighters are elite.
Okay, sure. Okay, so there's multiple levels to this, right? There's, what is the message the Baron is trying to send, right? And then it's like, what is the language the movie is trying to tell us about this guy, right?
Okay.
And just to me, if the movie wants to tell me he's a skilled fighter, the last guy he fights should be fucking huge.
Yeah, like the final boss.
Yeah, and I think there was a bigger guy he fought, sort of, but I think he was drugged.
Yeah, each of the other two guys, they drugged the strong guys, and then they left the frail guy undrugged.
Yeah, and it's just like, so if the movie wants me to think he's threatening, then
they should make his opponents threatening and not rig it.
The last guy, it should be like, okay, you know, okay, he doesn't need to, like, I don't know, like, just, you know, Gladiator, the guy where he just mercilessly, you know, kills them all. But, like, he's just fighting a guy who just isn't, like, he's like an older man. He gets, like, mad when the gods, like, sort of jump in. But he's just, like, struggling to beat up, like, a skinny old, like, 150-pound man. And it's just, like, I don't know. It doesn't look like he's, like, he's sort of like a noble warrior type thing. Like, he doesn't want to, like, cheat. Like, he keeps letting the, like, he stops the gods from doing stuff. And, you know, he, like, lets the guy sort of, you know, I think he turns off his shield, maybe. But it's just, like, the guy was so old and tiny. It looked sort of like, I don't think it was. I think it might have been an Asian man. But it's not the doctor, because the doctor died in the last one, I think.
Yeah, but it reminded you of him.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a very small, older man. And it's just like, this is the, like, only time, like, this is the character's, like, intro. His, like, I don't know, any other time you're trying to get, like, an intimidating villain, this is done just so much differently. So I felt like this was meant to be different. But then, at the end, they played it very straight, where they had them engage in single combat.
But pretty high-stakes single combat, because the winner of that got the throne to the entire universe.
Yeah, literally single combat to be... I actually think if Fey Rotha won, he was just the champion for...
The Emperor.
But I don't know if that meant he gets to marry the daughter, because that's what Paul does at the end for some reason.
No, but I think it's so that the Emperor maintains his emperorness.
Yes. So yeah, it's high stakes, but I just don't know if I about that. But the point being that, like, I don't know, this character was the worst thing in the movie to me. it made it so, like, I fundamentally couldn't understand the movie. I didn't know if the movie, like, meant this to be serious or not. Or just, like, this was more fake shit. You know, like, it was more part of the plan. It meant that, like, the stakes of the final part of the, like, so the end of the movie is like a, what, maybe 20 or 30 minute scene of just the Fremen and Paul just all attack Arrakis, right? So attack Arrakis is the planet. What the hell is the city called?
Arrakeen.
Arrakeen. So they attack Arrakeen. They have the sandworms. They take it over again. And then in a thing that was staged like a high school play, they have like the emperor and his gods and his daughter. And everyone's in like this very small room, which I guess is like the throne room or something.
Yeah.
And everyone's just sort of standing there while they do this single combat. And it's just like, I don't know, Christopher Walken is doing this with zero energy, which maybe is part of the character, or maybe is just, I don't know, he's 1,000 years old. And, I don't know, Florence Pugh is also there, and she's one of the Bene Gesserit, she's the daughter, who he decides to why does he decide to marry her? He, like, demands to marry her.
Instead of
Chani.
Well, before that, he tells Chani, he's like, I'll love you forever and for always, but I gotta do this in order to take over the Empire, right? Because that's a way for the Emperor to say, like, yes. Because otherwise, if the Emperor doesn't bless Paul as the new Emperor, then maybe the other houses won't accept him. Is that what it was? Because even though he did win the little one-on-one with Fade Rotha,
yes,
the other houses still rejected his emperorness.
Yes.
So, I'm not sure.
So, didn't make sense. So marrying her didn't seem to help. It wasn't like the great houses. Sorry, was it?
Maybe it was worth a shot. I don't know. It didn't help.
Like, yeah, did he just, like her better all of a sudden? It seemed like a political marriage that he wanted to do. But also, it mostly pissed off his girlfriend, who was already pretty pissed off at him. I'm actually not sure she still wanted him at this point, because she just seems increasingly angry at him because he keeps doing Messiah shit. Like, that's her whole role in this movie, is just be angry at him when he, like, sort of stumbles into Messiah shit. That's Chani. She kind of likes when he does terrorism.
Yeah, Fremen guerrilla warfare.
Yeah. But then anytime he, like, people think he's the Messiah, she doesn't like that. Which I get, sort of, because she doesn't believe in the Messiah. But, again, he does have magical powers, so it's hard to tell. And she does bring him back to life using her tears, I think.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah, which is another thing that happened. Again, who knows? So, yeah. I don't know. So the Austin Butler thing just really threw the whole movie for me. We spent so much time in the desert doing nothing. Like, it's crazy how long this movie is for how little happens.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just fuck around in the desert for like 2 hours.
Well, it's just guerrilla warfare, but it's... If you see the whole movie, like, now that I've seen the end of the movie,
yeah,
it begs the question, why were they dicking around in the desert for an hour and a half? Right? Because the final battle scene, whenever they take over Arakeen and kill a whole bunch of Sardaukar, we start getting some more insight into their battle strategy, right? So the whole dicking around in the first hour and a half, they're like hiding in the sand with straws, breathing, waiting for the Harkonnens to come drop a spice harvester machine. And then they'll like ambush the Harkonnens around the spice harvester machine and try to shoot it with like laser guns to blow it up, right? But they need foot soldiers for this. They can't just shoot the spice harvesting machine from afar with the laser gun. I couldn't figure that one out.
Although I think they eventually do that at some point. I feel like they do shoot it. Yeah,
but
I don't know.
But then we realize that they have nukes, okay? And I think even after they get their hands on the nukes, they're still doing guerrilla warfare, like boots on the ground. And then at the very end, whenever they're taking over Arakeen, we realize that they can ride sandworms and just literally swallow, battalions at once. And it's just, why are you doing guerrilla warfare? Because we know from the first movie that a sandworm can and wants to swallow spice harvesting machines. So why don't they just ride the fucking sandworm?
Yeah, just eat the machine. Yeah,
and just eat the machines.
That seems like the obvious thing. Yeah,
and you could literally risk one person for that. You don't even have to risk a whole army of people. You know, you don't have to go hiding under the sand in order to maybe kill a few Harkonnens at the same time you're trying to destroy the spice harvesting machine. If you have the ability to control a sandworm that seems to be a willing participant in the consumption of spice harvesting machines, then why wouldn't you just do that fucking every time? Why don't you stick around for an hour and a half?
We also saw in the first movie, you don't even need to do anything with the sandworm. If you just damage the thing that picks up the thing, the sandworm's going to get to eat it. So you could just do that, too.
With your laser gun.
Yeah.
If your laser gun is strong enough to like slice a hole through the spice harvesting machine, a big old fucking building of metal, and it's literally dropped off to its location via hot air balloon. Just fucking shoot your laser at the hot air balloon as it's trying to retrieve the spice harvesting machine, and the sandworm's going to eat the spice harvesting machine.
And they have, like, surface-to-air missiles, because I think there's a scene where, like, Johnny is trying to shoot one and, like, gets caught out, and Paul, and they're all dicking around. I think they made the first girl. Don't they meet Girly when he's, like, providing security for, like, a spice harvesting machine?
I think he was smuggling. It wasn't a Harkonnen-sanctioned spice harvesting machine. He was smuggling spice as like a rebel outlaw. Yeah, had his own little outfit of smugglers.
Yeah, and they decide not to... Yeah, I don't know. And like the fight scenes in this... I guess it's just because it's on sand, but like none of it seemed good. Like, I don't know. Like, people love this movie and think it's, like, a visual masterpiece and all. But, like, all the things people liked about this movie just didn't land for me. So, like, I was left with so little of it, you know? Like, I just don't get what people... Like, the fighting... Like, the fight at the end was just stupid. Like, yep. it was so nothing. Not just on, like, a story level, but just on, like, a... Like, I don't know. If you've ever seen Troy, which I've seen thousands of times, the fight between Brad Pitt and Eric Bana is, like, really good in... Like, something I'd rewatch on YouTube, you know, occasionally. But, like, you're never going to watch this, because this is stupid nonsense. It's not, like, interesting. It's not like this is, like, a fun fight. It's not like these characters are anything by the end of this. Like, I don't know. It's like, what is this fucking movie? I didn't know what the first movie was, but I thought it was set up for a different, like, a full movie. But yeah. This also felt like set up. Because I felt like the whole fucking desert thing was set up for a movie that was going to happen. And then that movie was 20 minutes of just riding a sandworm through everything. It was just like, why did they just... They mount the sandworms very easily. I mean, Paul mounts the sandworms at the end. Why don't the people who keep doing these, like, gruel attacks... Why didn't they mount the sandworms in the last movie and just eat all the fucking Atreides people? Like, what the fuck were they doing that whole time?
I don't know.
Because they've been able to find sandworms the whole time.
The whole time.
How is the first Paul the first guy to be like, what if we ride the sandworms and eat all the enemies? The sandworms are giant.
They're 400 meters long.
All they need to do is ride sandworms. They never need to do anything else. I'm sure these atomics, like, help somehow. But, like, mostly if you can just get a bunch of Fremen to ride sandworms, like, why can't you? Why couldn't you fight back against the Harkonnens in the first place? How were they ever pushed into the desert?
I have no clue. It doesn't make sense. But you're right that this movie feels like another setup. And the feeling you get, if you haven't seen Game of Thrones, it's exactly the same feeling. Because in Game of Thrones, it just seems like this ever-evolving tree. And they keep introducing new storylines and branching off, right? And I wonder if that's what this movie is going to be. There's never going to be any fucking circling back and resolution. And it's just going to be branching off and setting up for the next movie.
So yeah, I mean, I think the comparison, I mean, especially in the first movie, the Game of Thrones stuff seemed very clear. But, you know, and I think that this was written a long time ago. I think it was written in, like, the 60s. Right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's obviously not a ripoff of Game of Thrones, but since Game of Thrones was made for TV recently, you know, it's hard not to compare them. And, I mean, the thing about Game of Thrones is, like, there, like, were sort of... I mean, I don't know. I think, like, the watching Game of Thrones, regardless of the story, at least in the first few seasons, was just more interesting. Like, I think the characters were more interesting and the acting was better. Even though this is, like, a very... Like, this is, like, everyone's favorite group of actors ever right now. Like, Chalamet, Zendaya, Butler, Pugh. Like, those are all people's favorite actors right now. You know, in terms of young actors. So, like, this is a stacked cast. And the first one was as well. It had, what, Oscar Isaac and... Jason Momoa as well, in addition to, you know, this cast.
Yeah.
But, like, Game of Thrones would, like, you know, have a season where, like, you know, it sort of was, like, sort of political maneuvering, and then have a fight scene, or, like, a battle, usually in, like, the 9th episode, which I think was much better executed on average than these were. You know?
Yeah.
They had, like, sporadic action scenes that I think were all better executed. This was sort of like, I don't know, people love the visuals of it, but it was like very much just hanging out in the desert, and then the Harkonnen planet just being sort of very high contrast black and white, which, like, I mean, is a thing you can do in color correction, is you can make your shots look, you know, high contrast black and white, but, like, that's not super interesting. It just looked like a small coliseum. and then like hallways. You know, like as part of a larger thing, maybe. But like in the end, it's like we're gonna fight the, but we don't know anything about the great houses. You know, that's not a character we care about. Is these leaders of the unnamed great houses? I don't know why those great houses don't just lost their own atomics, because everyone has fucking atomics everywhere. I don't know because I don't know anything about them. I know a lot about the Harkonnens, who I think are all dead now.
Well, because
did
Lady
the Baron
Jessica
not get killed?
Yeah, the Baron got killed. Robin's dead. Fade Rotha's dead. Yeah, I guess the Harkonnen leadership is all
Jessica
dead.
Jessica is the Baron's daughter, right?
Yes.
Okay. But again, that doesn't matter at all.
No, not yet.
But again, the Bene Gesserit already had control of everything.
Yes.
Without doing a single goddamn thing, the Bene Gesserits just, like, organically were just part of every major house. And could have just chilled. Again, I don't know what they want. It's possible that it was in the movie. But I don't know what it is. And, yeah, I guess the Fremen are just, like, sort of the Dothrakis. They just needed, like, grunts for an army. So that's why they got a bunch of Fremens. I think they started out with an army, though, when they had the Atreides. And the Harkonnens also had an army. It seems like if all these armies didn't just kill each other, and the Bene Gesserits just, like, had a political marriage between the Atreides and the Harkonnens, which they sort of did, because they had a Harkonnen be a mistress to the Atreides. It seemed like if they were just more upfront about that, maybe they could have not done this whole fucking movie. Or the last movie. I could have cut out two whole movies. But yeah, I don't know. Like, so Paul just sort of decides he wants to be the Messiah, which I get. He marries the princess, which I get. And then he wants to go fight the great houses. I just don't know what anyone wants. In Game of Thrones, you had like a sense of what the characters like wanted, I feel like.
Yeah, they all want control of the Empire.
Yeah, but like, sort of why, you know, they wanted things. Like, you know, the Targaryens wanted to be restored to the Targaryen-ness, you know, fucking... you know, the Lannisters wanted, you know, whatever, the Lannisters were all over the place. They had a lot of different things going on. You know, the other guy wanted Northern independence. You know, it's like, everyone had sort of, like, their own thing. In this, like, the Emperor's already the Emperor. He doesn't want any challenges. The Harkonnens want to kill the Atreides because they're mad that the Emperor took away their thing, I guess. That was the first movie. That was the entire first movie. And then maybe, I don't know what they want past that, because they killed all the Atreides the last movie. So now they just want to harvest spice, I guess? Like they were doing before the first movie? I mean, the first movie just gets us back to the status quo. Like, in the first movie, you see an intro that's like, the Harkonnens controlled this planet. And then at the end, the Harkonnens controlled the planet. And then you just had that whole movie in between that just ended up with a bunch of Atreides dying. But we didn't know anything about the Atreides before the movie started, so, like, none of that matters at all. And then, at the end of this one, I guess they're going to do, like, a space war against the Grace Houses. But again, like, who cares? Because we don't know anything about the Great Houses. We don't know what any of these people want. I don't know what the consequences of any of them winning. Like, if next movie the Great Houses just kill them all, I'd be like, oh, well, that definitely happened. And if they kill all the great houses, I'd be like, well, that was a, like, just guys you know, told us they existed and then stopped existing type of thing. You know, it's just like, it's like a, it all feels like a filler episode. Like, I don't know why any of these, you know, it doesn't feel like these characters are on, like, a collision course at any point. It seems like occasionally characters just show up in the story and then are dispatched with, and then here we are. You know?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But you mentioned that Fade Rotha was the second potential Lisan Al-Ghaib, or the chosen one, right?
Yes.
But I think they mentioned in the movie that each of the great houses has a guy. Like, all of the Bene Gesserits that have sort of weaseled their way in to be, you know, the great house leader's wife, they all seem to have, like, a 17 or 18-year-old son who's, like, about to rise to power. So, I think the other great houses also have, I don't know, late teen sons or early 20s sons.
Do they? Because we never see them, though, right?
We never see them, but I think it's hinted at, and the great houses, maybe that's why, because the end of the movie, it's, right, it's Paul, and he just killed Fade Rotha, and he's like, all right, now I'm going to marry the emperor's daughter, and the great houses are pissed about it because they don't think I should be emperor, so I'm going to have to, like, kill them. But I think the great houses, maybe they all have a Fade Rotha of their own, that they're like, no, my...
So why does the Bene Gesserit at this point just tell him to stand down?
I don't know, because you can't figure out what the Bene Gesserit wants.
Okay. And, like, I know we only had 3 hours of screen time in this movie. Why wouldn't we see any of those... do we see any of the great houses at all? How many great houses are there?
We don't know.
Okay. Do we see a single character from a great house that isn't Harkonnen or Fremen? Or
Atreides? No.
Okay. Are we sure they exist? Is this like one of those things where they're like, oh, don't do anything or the great houses will come? Like, they could easily just not exist and it would not change the plot of this movie, right?
Yes. But it's setting it up for part 3. That was probably the most disappointing thing about this movie. And it came up on the screen, you know, pretty early on. Because I thought this was Dune 2, but in fact it's Dune Part 2. And that just, you know, was pretty depressing because I knew at that point there would probably be a Part 3 and that the following 2.5 hours was going to suck ass. And that's exactly what happened. So, super excited for Part 3.
This is a terrible movie, right?
This is a terrible series of movies.
This is so fucking bad. I don't mean to be dramatic. I really don't. And, like, there's some movies I watch and they're bad, and I'm like, I don't like that movie. This is a movie that makes me, like, feel less connected. And I think I've said this before, like, less connected to other people in the world. You know, like, I don't, like, the fact that other people like this means that I feel like I'm further away from understanding the thoughts and, like, ideas of other people. Like, I don't know how you could watch this movie and like a single thing about it. I don't know how you could see Austin Butler in this movie and not be like, that was really fucking stupid. And, like, I don't know how you could, like, people thought it was hilarious every time Javier Bardem is like, oh no, he's the chosen one. Like, that's, he's more the chosen one now. It's like, what is this? Like, this isn't comedy. This is nonsense. Like, people lost their shit over everything in this movie. And, like, it all sucks. It's long and it's boring. And it's just like, it's not visually interesting at all. The fight scenes suck. Like, every scene, like, every stock scene that they have is a shitty version of a scene in something else. Like, the Colosseum, you know, introduction scene is just a worse version of a million of those same introduction scenes we've seen a million times, but they were better and more interesting.
The relationship between Stilgar and Paul, like, is the Matrix. He's Morpheus. There's a better version of that that exists.
Yeah. But, like, somehow, like, Keanu was more charismatic, and, like, Lawrence Fishburne definitely was. And Javier Bardem is, like, a good actor. They're all, like, good actors. You know?
Yeah.
I, like, don't understand any of it. And, like, again, like, I could just be wrong. Like, maybe this is secretly good, and everybody else is correct that it is good, and I am wrong that it's bad. But, like, probably not. That's not how things usually go. Usually everyone else is wrong. And I think that's a continuing trend. Like, this movie is so... Like, the first movie was all set up for nothing. And then this movie was more set up. And it's like, where do I get my payoff? Like, we had a duel at the end. Why wasn't that interesting? Why wasn't it fun to watch? Why wasn't the fight in the Colosseum fun to watch? I love watching fighting in Colosseums. Watched a lot of Spartacus. Love the movie Gladiator.
Yep.
You know? Gladiator has like 10 fights in probably less. Like 6 fights in Colosseums.
Yeah.
And they're all very different.
Yes.
And they all communicate like a lot of story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all good.
It's all good. Like, I mean, I haven't seen Gladiator the full way through many times because every time I watch it, I just go to those Gladiator scenes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've seen it a few times, but, and they're making a second one soon. Maybe we'll watch that. But, you know, there's like the fights early when he's in like the small places and he's just much more skilled and like, you know, and then there's the one where he works together with all the people. And then there's the one he fights the old guy with the tigers. And then he fights, you know, Commodus at the end.
Yeah.
And there's, I think, probably a couple that I'm skipping over just, you know, as they're building up to it. But it's all much more interesting. I mean, Spartacus has the same thing. It's all about gladiators and they fight a few times. And again, this movie isn't mostly gladiators, but had a couple, you know, single combat scenes. Same with Troy. Troy has like a very like an iconic single combat scene, that is like really like well integrated into the story, but also like interesting to watch for the moments it's on screen. And this like whenever they do the Gruul warfare thing, it just like I don't know if I just don't like the setting of fucking desert. But everyone's just, like, in these, like, gobs and running around the desert, and the fighting is sort of, like, the choreography is just sort of uninteresting, and the stakes of it are not super clear, and then it happens, and then it ends, and I'm just like, okay, what happens next? Like, I got, like, no excitement out of any of it. Like, the characters I just thought were kind of boring, because, I don't know, I never liked the character of, like, the Zendaya character here. Where she's just, like, mad at the guy for doing the movie the whole time. Because, like, I don't know, maybe she's right that he shouldn't be the Messiah or whatever the fuck is happening. I can't tell, because it's so, like, divorced from reality. That, like, how am I supposed to be... Whose side am I supposed to be on? You know? Like, this guy... Oh, also, anytime they do the commanding voice, it's like, this is the best they could come up with for that type of thing. You know? Like, it's cartoonish. Like, who signed off on this?
But I think you said it, because at some point you were like, just whimsically through that, you know, you said, what happens next? And I think that's the point. It's just a game to keep the game going. It's just shit to put on screen with people who, you know, actors that people generally like. But from a story perspective, it's vapid nothing. It's a pile of shit. It's just what happens next? Because eventually the interesting stuff has to come is the mentality that this is really preying upon. Unfortunately, it's just never going to come. I don't think there's ever going to be a payoff. There's no reason to continue watching it.
It's been 5 hours a movie, right?
It's been 5 hours and I haven't been like captivated once.
So like I made a thing, right? And I made a pilot and it's like 25 minutes long. And I sit there and watch it and I'm like, oh my God, this is tedious. Like, I get why all these scenes are here, because I wrote them, but this, like, takes so long to get going. And, like, what's the payoff? Nothing. This is 5 hours of and I think less visually interesting, because it's all in a fucking desert. But, like, it's just, like, I get that, like, sometimes you just, but, like, what? Like, what is the story they're so, like, determined to tell over these 5 hours? And why, I mean, this is the thing. Other people love all these individual scenes, but everything just seems overly long and kind of boring and just, like, kind of flat. Like, I just don't know what... There's the things that people go crazy over, and I just don't, like, get it. Like, I don't know what people like in this. Like, Austin Butler's performance, I think, was, like, disastrously bad. Like, I don't want to criticize just necessarily his performance, but like his whole character, just like everything about this thing that was happening when he was on screen was disastrous to me. Like, made it impossible to enjoy a movie where it was happening. And like, but people love that. And I just like want to like go and interrogate these people and be like, what are you talking about? Like, what is it about this movie? And like, I want them to have to give me a concrete answer. Cause like, I want to understand. Cause I like, these movies cause me distress. And like, cause like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't know what's going on with people. It's like one of those things where it's like, it seems like you're sort of fucking with me and like, I saw a different movie, you know? Like, you showed me a...
gaslighting you?
Yeah, like...
Society is gaslighting you.
Like, I went and there was a theater full of people who all watched this movie, and everyone's like, okay, guys, we're going to show the really boring version of the movie, but everyone go fucking crazy. So then when David goes and talks about it on the internet, he's going to feel like he's nuts. And that's, like, what happened. And Brayden's in on it. But, like, I don't know. Like, I watched this, and, like, it made fucking $700 million. It's like, why?
I don't know.
People, get your money back.
When I saw that, right, because the budget for this movie was $190 million and the box office was $700 million. And it's just like, who the fuck is going to see these movies? Who's going to see movies?
I guess that's my fault.
Yeah, you're part of the problem.
I am. I am part of the problem. But, like, how did this cost $190 million? It was just fucking around in the desert. Like, I get you had to throw some sandworms in at the end, but, like, it was 3 hours of desert shit. You know?
Seemingly unnecessary desert shit. And knowing that you can ride sandworms.
The end looked like a school play. When they're all just in the throne room, and it's just like groups of people like standing off to various sides, and it's like very like it's very claustrophobic, and I'm just like, this is the set? This is the throne room? And we saw Game of Thrones, that had some throne rooms. You don't have like a back lot that has a giant throne room? You know? Somewhere I can, like, I don't know, sort of see the geography of the room. But it's like Christopher Walken and his, like, whole group just, like, huddled over. And you're like, this is the Emperor? Like, why is the Emperor just some guy? Is that the point? Again, is that the point? Like, I don't know.
Not sure.
Just, like, the other guy, the Baron, floats around in a fucking thing. He's like a weird swamp Jabba the Hutt creature. You know, who levitates. You know? So, like, I don't know. This guy's, like, an alopecia with, like, a weird, like, you know, snake tongue looking thing. Like, he's always licking stuff. And like, I couldn't tell. Was it supposed to be menacing? Was it supposed to be cartoonish? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. Was he drawing from Venom? Couldn't tell you.
So,
but also in this movie, we learned, that they have sacred water. Like, we actually got eyes on the water reserves that they have, right? That's going to repopulate the planet. And he said it was 38 million deciliters, which is approximately 100 million gallons. And I don't know, a large lake might be a billion gallons. So this is a small lake. And I don't know how large this planet is because they seem to have gravity comparable to Earth. I don't know, humans walking around. So it doesn't look like they can float a whole bunch.
But
how is a small lake going to repopulate all of the trees on the planet?
Here's another thing. Can water repopulate?
I don't know what the it's magical water.
What's
to
the
them.
Mechanism by which water repopulates?
I don't know. They have water recyclers. You know, they can recycle pests.
Can they just pull water out of the air?
Like, I would think
so. That.
Yes.
They do that. Actually, you know, when I was at my high school reunion, we watched the movie called The Martian. And The Martian just makes water out of some hydrogen. Oh, no, he does it the other way. No, what does he do? No, he does that. Yeah, that's what he does. He gets some oxygen, and he gets some hydrogen, and he throws them all together, and he makes some oxygen. So my question is, how are they having so much trouble with this water issue?
I don't know. It's not that they... Maybe they don't have an issue... No, they do have the issue with the water. Yeah.
I know the spice, like, I know in the first movie, there's, like, one little scene where the lady is like, yeah, we were gonna, like, do all this, like, water shit, but then they wanted to harvest spice so much that they didn't do that. And I just, like, sort of feel like, again, I haven't, like, colonized the Middle East. But, like, if I were to do that, to get their space oil, and they were like, okay, we're gonna keep, like, guerrilla warfaring you because we don't want you to do this because you stopped all, like, water production. I feel like I would probably just, like, try to make the water shit happen so I could keep getting my space oil. But they, like, refuse to do the water thing, so these people, like, saving water from dead people, in order to survive, or just, like, as a ceremonial thing, either way, but, like, it just seems like it all seems like a solvable problem. In a world where every great house has their own nukes, we can't do a little bit of light science here to just get some water for these fucking desert people, like.
So you think the Harkonnens, it would go a long way, to just, like, provide some water to the Fremen?
Yeah, just, like, do some, like, I don't know, nation building over there. Like, I don't know. Like, what the fuck do they want? Like, I don't know what they want. Do they want to do the terrorism? Do they want the spice themselves? It doesn't seem like they have a good spice harvesting system. Like, yeah. Do they want, like, profit sharing for the spice, or they just want water? They just want water. Like, be like, oh, we'll do some reforestation if you just let us take the spice, and they'll just be like, oh, okay, it seems fair enough. Like, we weren't making a lot of progress with our fucking, you know, worm-based travel economy. Like, I don't know. Like, what do they do? Like, what do they do other than the terrorism?
I don't know. It seems they have the entire southern hemisphere.
Yeah, like,
but I guess half of the planet is not enough for them.
But it's like, when you go to the southern hemisphere, like, it doesn't seem like they have, like, this giant, thriving city.
No.
It seems like they just have a larger group of cave people.
Bunch
right?
More
like,
sieges.
Do they have any water there, or are they not allowed to have water in the dust cloud?
I don't know. I think the Harkonnens were brutal, and that's why they don't have cities.
But the Harkonnens don't go to the South Pot. They think no one's there.
Yeah. It's more of the movie not making sense.
Right? Like, again, I must have missed most of this movie.
You know what one of my favorite parts was, though? Like, throughout the movie, they're dicking around in the desert for a good hour and 45 minutes, right? And
yeah.
The whole while, Paul is assimilating into the Fremen culture. And Stilgar is, like, wowed every time Paul does something Fremen-like, because that's part of the prophecy, right? The person that comes in, the Messiah, he's just going to be able to assimilate into your culture. And he's going to be a Fremen, like, overnight. And it's just like, in the first movie, we saw that before the House Atreides went to Arrakis, Paul was just studying YouTube videos. He just, like, he got a degree in Fremenology. And now he's just, like, convincing them that he is the Messiah just because he watched a lot of YouTube videos in part one. And it's just like, anyone could have done that. I'm sure Fade Rotha, rather than dick around in the gladiator arena with some drugged up participants, he could have just been watching YouTube videos the whole time and then convinced that he was the one, you know?
Yeah, he was doing, like, Fremen ethnic studies
yeah.
as, like, a minor, and then,
And now it's paying huge dividends. He's the leader of the Fremen, because he had access to YouTube. I don't know.
This is like, have you ever seen those videos on YouTube where it's like, oh, a clueless white guy goes to Chinese restaurant and, like, speaks perfect Chinese?
Xiaoma, yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, like, you can learn Chinese even if you're not, you know, ethnically Chinese, like, but these people, like, losing it. They're like, oh my god, can you believe it? It's like, yeah, people watch people. It's very common to speak Chinese. Like, occasionally a white person's gonna do it. Like, why is this guy impressive? All the Chinese people speak Chinese. Like, what the fuck? Chinese people speak English all the time. We don't lose our shit. Like, this guy, like, goes into the desert and, like, does random desert people shit, which he, like, knew about beforehand. And he's like, I don't know. He's also, again, he has magical powers. And again, he, like, yeah, is, like, bred for this stuff and is, like, trying to impress them, and the guy's just like, yeah, I mean, I know the guy's supposed to be, like, a little weird cult leader, and he's just, like, you know, very impressed every time at, like, you know, Timothy Chalamet's, like, feigned humility and whatever, but
yeah,
I don't know. This guy really dances with wolves his entire way to some kind of nuclear war at the end. So
yeah, one of the other questions I had was, what are the ramifications to stopping spice production? Right. So that's the goal of the Fremen. They want to stop spice production to restore their planet. And right. I guess if they restore their planet, spice production is cut off. What are the universal ramifications to that?
So like, you need spice to do spaceship navigation.
At light speed, right? Like in order to do any sort of interstellar travel.
I think so.
So presumably, I don't know. They probably have spice stores on other planets. Like, is there nowhere else to get spice other than Arrakis? And if so, why wouldn't they just take all the Fremen people and give them the Atreides planet, now that it has no people?
Yeah, why don't they just set them up with the harvesters and be like, can you sell us the spice?
You can, like, have all this control and we'll all this money.
We'll trade you the water. Like, no one wants to live in this, like, fucking desert place. Like, no one seems, like, stoked to be there. You know, it's not like in between the spice harvesting, they're like, I don't know, really having a great time seeing the sights, you know? So, like, why not just, why not just make some, the Fremen just, like, so against harvesting spice, they just like to, because they all do it, right? They do it as, like, a drug? That's why they have blue eyes? Or is that just from, like, exposure?
I think it's exposure. Yeah, I don't think it's they do it for drug purposes. I think it's just exposure because they live in the desert.
Yeah, they're all fucking around with... Yeah, I don't know why they need to colonize this whole place in order to get the spice. I guess maybe that's, like, a commentary on something. But again, I need stuff to make sense, like, within the confines of the movie. Because, yeah, I don't know. It's unclear, like, with the Fremen, they just refuse to, like, harvest the spice if people don't come in and invade their planet and make them?
I think taking their lake's worth of water and growing trees on the whole planet is worth more than interstellar travel. I think they just, maybe they want to get rid of the desert. But then, if they get rid of the desert and it becomes a forest, right, and the whole planet is as subtropical as the planet Atreides, what are the sand? Where does that leave the sandworms? The sandworms are their holy things, right? So, like, would it not kill all the fucking sandworms to get? Could you imagine if, like,
yeah, like,
I don't
this
know,
is
blue
a
whales
desert
were our
planet.
Sacred animal? If blue whales were our sacred animal, and me as an earth creature was like, nah, we got to get rid of this water to make it
like
all land again.
Team Magma from Pokemon.
Yeah, it's just like, where does that leave the fucking sandworms, is my question. Can sandworms exist in this subtropical paradise that they want so badly? Or would they be okay if, like, maybe the northern hemisphere were a desert? Or maybe just shit around the equator were a desert, you know, much like it is on Earth, and then you can live in the far north and far south in your subtropical whatever paradise with a bunch of water and trees. It's just like, can't both exist? Why does it have to be all or nothing?
Yeah, I don't know. And, like, what happens in the south? Like, are they... Is that not developed? Is that just going to be a giant dust storm forever? Or is that just because of the spice shit?
It's crazy. It's crazy because... the dust storm only affects the south. It's like equatorial and south. And the north is good.
And, like, when they approach the planet, like, you see this giant thing and you're like, oh, no one lives in there. Have you checked? Oh, not really. Like, you can walk right through it, right? I mean, you can take a sandworm through it. Can you not drive, like, a tank through it?
No, because the sandworm's going to eat the tank. I don't know.
Like, did no one check? It'd be so weird to, like, not notice a giant civilization of a million people.
How tall do you think the dust storm is that convinces them the south is uninhabitable?
So the thing about this is, they have spaceships.
They have spaceships that can easily get... It's not even a question for them. The great houses have spaceships that are just floating in the sky.
It's not like if you were just like, oh, like a people walking around and you saw a giant dust storm, and you would be like, oh, okay, that seems uninhabitable. Like, it's like a boundary in a video game. Like, it hasn't loaded yet. But, like, if you have an open world where you can fucking fly, like, it doesn't go up forever. You know what I mean? It's not just, like, going through space, you know, in a dust storm.
Even so, like, if it's 2 miles tall.
It's a dome? Again, it has to be a dome of some kind.
It's got to be. Yeah. And you got to get through it. But how do you not have enough with your navigation or with your newfangled technology in the year 10,000 to be able to see through a dust storm? How does a dust storm prevent you from, I don't know, flying? Because clouds don't prevent airplanes from flying, you know?
And, like, when you see this, the worms go through it with a bunch of people on the back, I guess you're not monitoring that. I just feel like if I were those people, I'd have a satellite somewhere, like, keeping an eye on the sandworms, and be like, oh, it looks like a bunch of fucking people are riding on the back of that sandworm. That's a little weird. Oh, they're going to the south, the uninhabitable part. You know? I wonder how this plays out. Especially if I was, like, looking for a couple people, you know, who were, like, the exiled rulers of, you know, a great house or whatever. I don't know. I don't know how any of this makes even the smallest amount of sense. I imagine it makes more sense in the book, or more sense if you, I don't know, maybe paid closer attention than I did. Again, I don't want to, like, blame the movie if I just zoned out for a little bit. You'll have to forgive me, because it was fucking 3 hours long for some reason. And a lot of it was the desert shit. So, I mean, it was really, there were a lot of opportunities for me to get lost in this desert. Yeah, I don't know. This was absolute garbage movie. I can't believe they made a second one, and I can't believe they're making a third one. People keep being like, oh, the third one, you're really going to see how bad Paul is. It's like, I don't know. I already hate this fucking guy. I hate all these characters, though.
How bad Paul is?
He's bad. Because he's not, you know, you think the Messiah is a good guy, but he's actually a bad guy.
Oh, he's going to cause a holy war.
Yeah, I mean, isn't he already doing that, though? He just started a nuclear war, like, 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that he killed the weird bald guy, because that guy sucked. But, like,
I mean, that whole society sucks.
Yeah, like, but all these societies suck, though?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I feel like I'm supposed to sympathize with these desert people, but they just seem so fucking ridiculous. And they just do the goofiest shit that, like, it's impossible to take them seriously. And then the Harkonnens just seem evil the whole time. They just, like, murdered a bunch of people. And then the Atreides are all dead. And then the Emperor is just, like, sleepwalking through his scene, so it's hard to, like, really care about what he's doing. And Florence Pugh is just wearing, like, increasingly, like, elaborate headgear. So I'm just sort of like, I know she's, you know, a famous actress, but, like, I'm not on board. And Anya Taylor-Joy is his sister in the future, so I'm sort of, you know, she's sort of one of my favorites, so I'm sort of willing to see where that goes. But, like, you know, she's currently a fetus. So it's I don't know, I just really don't have any people to root for. I know people like Rebecca Ferguson a lot, but she's just kind of like a weird religious nut in this, so.
You're not rooting for the Bene Gesserits?
No, like, I don't know what the fuck, their plans are measured in centuries, they said. That's, you know, sometimes, I don't know, you have parents too. You have parents, and my parents are always talking about, like, oh, you know, you're gonna, like, do this, like, fucking 401k, because then in, like, 30 years, you can do a retirement and stuff. And you're always like, that is, like, infinity time. You know, like, you can't possibly ask me to care about things that happen more than 3 years from now. Like, that just doesn't exist. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't plan for that. That's so far away. You know? And these people, like, things are measured in centuries. But people only live, like, maybe one century. So you ask me to plan for, like, several people's lifetime, like, from now, as your plan for, again, God knows what? It doesn't seem like it's not a pressing plan, you know? It's not like you desperately need your great-great-great-grandchildren to, like, be the emperor of the fucking Dune. Like, who the fuck is? Like, none of this, there's no consequence to any of this. Like, why would I care about any of this? Like, no one's life seems improved by any actions anyone takes ever. Their own actions, other people's actions, like, I don't know what anyone's trying to do. Like, why'd they, If they had stayed on fucking wherever they came from before Atreides, Arrakis, that would have been chill. I don't know why the Hawk. I don't know why anyone wants Arrakis. Again, the spice. I know the fucking spice. I don't know what. Why does anyone need to do space travel? None of these planets seem interesting. I don't get that.
Yeah, where are they going?
Everyone stay on your own fucking planet. Like, calm down. Like, why do we need to do interstellar travel?
I don't know, but if we draw lessons from that, right? If we say that the Bene Gesserit have the master plan and they should think in centuries, that does not bode well for this movie series as a series, because it's just going to continue to be uninteresting shit if movies 1 and 2 are just setting things up, right? There might be some interesting shit in part 8, but we still have fucking 6 more movies. There's 5 more movies to endure before something interesting happens.
So I think Anya Taylor-Joy is supposed to be in the next one. So the first one took place over like a couple days, and this one took place over like a year. I'm hoping there's like a 20-year time skip so Anya Taylor-Joy can be born or something.
Okay.
And then I'm hoping the movies just take place over like longer periods of time. So like by the end, like this one, you know, first one was a day, next one was a year, the next one is like 300 years. And then it's over. Because now we know what the plan is and they accomplish it or don't accomplish it. Again, I don't care. I don't care. Do whatever the fuck you want. Like, it's like one of those things where they're like doing a bunch of scheming and you're just like, I don't care what you're doing. Like, do you want... Like, it's like... I don't know. Sometimes you have people and they're like, they want to go somewhere and they're like, oh, you like headed to this place? You're like, no. No, like, okay. And you're like, oh, did you want to go there? And they're like, oh, if you're headed there, you're like, okay, fine. It's like, whatever the Bene Gesserit want, if they just like asked me, I'd be like, yeah, sure. Like, whatever. Like, you want to marry the emperor? Like, yeah, whatever. Who the fuck is? Like, I don't know. You fucked the other guy and you had a kid with, like, sure. Like, we don't, why do we, you have magical powers. Why is there all this secrecy? Like, what is this plan? Tell me the plan. Maybe we'll just, like... I think everyone should just talk it out. Like, I don't understand what the hell is happening. Like, everyone has these, like, weird, like, schemes and stuff. It's, like, for nothing. I don't know what they want. You know? Well, tell me what you want.
So what's her name? Lea Seydoux, or Seydoux. She did the little death box trick with the needle to fade Rotha. Right before banging him and securing his child, right?
Yeah.
Because I guess he was not going to be the Kwisatz Haderach. So, I guess the Bene Gesserits are just semen collectors? Like, just universal semen cum dumpsters? So, yeah, good for them. But, unfortunately, like, I don't know. Zendaya was a huge part of the marketing for Dune 1. And then she just had no speaking lines in it, right?
Yeah, and she's not really in that one.
I guess my question is, knowing that, what's her name? The Anya girl? Anya Taylor-Joy. Like, she played the role that Zendaya did in the last movie. So my question is, was she a huge part of the marketing for Dune Part 2?
No, she was an uncredited appearance in one scene. She has no lines.
Yeah. But that's what Zendaya was in Dune Part 1. So I was just curious.
Zendaya had a couple. So Zendaya had like a supporting role in the first one that was sort of billed as a lead, I think. Anya Taylor-Joy had a cameo in this one.
Gotcha.
I don't even know if she's in the next one. I think she is in the next one, but I don't know that she's in the next one.
I just don't want you to get your hopes up.
I don't know how my hopes could be lower. I hate these fucking movies. Like, I wish, like, if I could pass a law that they couldn't make these, I would do that. This is such a waste of, like, human enterprise. This is so fucking stupid. And the people who like it, I think it makes them dumber. Like, I don't know, like, what the fuck is happening here. Like, I just think this is, like, one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. I don't know. I'm despondent over the fact they keep making these.
Well, I guess there aren't a lot of other good movies coming out these days. And there's only so many Marvel movies you can make. Sometimes.
You know? Zendaya was in Challengers. People going crazy for that. I'd watch that before I watch this. I guess I didn't, but I would. You know? What else? There's other movies. I mean, there's movies people make.
Dumb Money. Anyone but you.
There's Venom 3. There's Twisters. There's the second Joker. I have Gladiator 2. is Mufasa? Like, what was Mufasa like before he was the Lion King? Who knows?
Well, I'd watch that.
You know, apparently in that one, he wasn't the king. It's not like a lineage thing. It's like, he like, I don't know, earned the part of king, and then his brother was still mad that he wasn't king, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Oh, Mufasa was the younger brother to Scar?
No. Mufasa, like, wasn't supposed to be the king.
Ah.
It wasn't like a familial king line. It was just like he became the king somehow. He, like,
this
took
is
over.
Already more interesting than Dune 2.
Yeah, like the political, you know, yeah. Does that movie Fly Me to the Moon about how the moon landing's fake, maybe? There's Minecraft the movie. There's another Bad Boys. There's Maxine, the like third in the like the porn star horror movie trilogy. There's like five Marvel movies that they're still making. Like, I don't know. There's the end of that Spider-Man movie that they made that people thought was good but never had an end. I mean, there's lots of movies. Most of them are bad, but there's lots of movies. You know? And, like, this is a bad one. This is a bad thing to make.
This
like, you shouldn't do it.
8.6 on IMDb and a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
There's people all wrong.
So I think IMDb ratings are skewed shortly after the movie comes out, right? And it takes a little bit. It takes, like, 6 months. I don't know when this movie first hit theaters. I feel like it's still in theaters. It was a fluke that I got to actually see this on HBO Max.
But, it came out in March.
Yeah. Okay. So it's got to still be in theaters, right? And it hasn't reached, you know, the IMDb score hasn't normalized. It's still just overinflated.
No,
I don't
know
where
it's
going to
remain high.
I don't see how it's got to come down.
The first one was 83 and then 90, and that one was, you know, I think that was just a home release. But I think people really like this movie.
That's tough. That is tough. Because the best movies out there, like Shawshank or Godfather, are like 9.2, 9.3. And for this to be within sniffing distance of that is just a fucking travesty. I don't get it. This one, definite nephew.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. There's sometimes I watch, like, I listen to podcasts and I watch things. And you see, like, increasingly that as podcasters become more famous, and, you know, a lot of people who talk about films have, like, aspirations to work in the film industry, and sometimes they're afraid of, like, insulting movies or being critical.
Because they have longer-term plans?
And I don't want to be critical, you know, but, like, they might eventually work with somebody, or they might end up not getting a job because they're, like, you know, you don't like the movie. Fortunately, I have no future in any kind of thing. So I'm comfortable saying this was fucking terrible. Like, this was the people who made this, like, you made a mistake. Like, you did a bad thing. Not even like a, but you did a bad thing. Like, you did a bad thing. Like, you shouldn't have done this.
Production company was Legendary Pictures. Fuck you, Legendary Pictures.
Yeah, but, like, everyone involved, all the, like, creatives, like, all of you. Like, everyone should be held to account. Everyone who had, like, some creative input, because this was a really bad movie. Like, it was so long, it cost so much money. It's like, you could have done something else. You could have made a better movie. You could have not made a movie. Either one would have been fine. But, like, you did it twice. You did it the first time, and then you did it the second time. And I got tricked both times, and that's sort of on me. But, like, it's also on these people, because, like, they should know better. They should not make terrible, fucking, boring movies. And they did it, and they did it again, and they plan on doing it a third time. They're calling their shot. And I wish that everyone would be... You know, it's hard to rally the normal everyday people to say, we're not going to watch terrible movies, so you can stop making them. But we did it with Marvel. Endgame was terrible, and then we all stopped watching them. And then, look, now Marvel is scrambling because they don't know how to make good movies anymore. And this is what we have to do. We have to say, Dune people, Doonies, you got to make a good movie. You know, like, you can't keep making shitty movies. It's not allowed. It shouldn't be allowed. You know, I see people every day trying to get a fucking, you know, random budget to make their random, stupid fucking, you know, independent movie, and they can't. I know. But these people can get $200 million to make garbage, and it's terrible. So, I think it's terrible. We're probably going to end up watching the third one eventually. Yes. I'll watch to say about that. But I think that's our take. I think everyone knew what we were going to say coming in, and I think we said it. So,
Excited for Dune Part 3 in a little bit.
Yeah, Dune Part 3. By the time I upload this, it will probably be coming up.
All right. Fwe, fwe, fwe.